Good morning, y'all. I'm currently in Quebec, Canada, recovering from my cold from last week and having a wonderful time simultaneously at a music festival here. I'm so fortunate to be able to study with the French professor this week and the American professor next week, but as per usual, that is absolutely unrelated to the topic at hand, which is capsule libraries and the device we so amazingly call a Kindle. Hello and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book and let's begin. My one peg for the episode right now is coming now, and that is please go and listen to Malcolm Gladwell's new episode of Revisionist History. It's my favorite podcast of all time and my favorite body of work from him of all time. I'm a huge fan of Gladwell. I have read his articles even back when he was working at the Washington Post, and now he's working at the New Yorker. I love his articles and his books as well, but I just think that there's something really special about his podcast, and he's just adapted to the medium so well, so I'd really recommend them. If you've been a long-time listener on my show, you know that I'm absolutely obsessed with Gladwell, and I've mentioned him almost every episode anyway, but the way he thinks and processes things is just so fascinating to me, and as a result, I've probably listened to the whole of Revisionist History at least 3 to 4 to 5 times, if not more, for certain episodes. I went to an outing to a church in Chicago called St. Benedict the African with one of my favorite professors, and a few weeks ago, for an analysis of its church architecture, and it was really an impressive and humbling experience to get to go into that church and meet a lot of the nuns and the rectors there, but as we were leaving, my professor said to me, "Everything here is just so well done," and that's exactly how I feel about Malcolm Gladwell's podcast. Malcolm Gladwell, by the way, has a book coming out about strangers that is releasing in September, so I've already pre-ordered that and hope to find a colleague or professor to discuss with me, so look out for that. If you have any recommendations about professionals that you think would be great to discuss that with, let me know. My email is on my website. So we've already been down the rabbit hole of less in this podcast, minimalism, where the roots of literary minimalism came from, such like that, and I'm back today to talk about this conundrum that I've been thinking about, which is traveling and book loving together. I won't really be back into the US until much later in the year, but of course, as school is finished, I've picked back up to reading like 3 or 4 books a week again because I don't have class readings anymore, which is amazing, but it's also problematic because I don't currently have a Kindle, which we'll talk about a bit later, but I also can't afford to carry around a heavy suitcase everywhere I go. I'll start with the term capsule library. I made it up. It's loosely from Courtney Carver's capsule wardrobe, which is typically, I think her system is called 333. It's the wardrobe that has 33 items in it. I personally am also doing a capsule wardrobe of about 23 items for the summer, but we're here for books, so let's stick to that. An important concept to consider when paring down books for the summer, especially if you do not have a Kindle and have an extensive library like I do, is the longevity of the items that you're bringing. I can make the analogy of my shampoos and body washes because I switched everything to bars or solid shampoos before I left the States so that I could not only get used to the different products before I went into a completely different country, but also so that I could prepare to use a system that I knew would work for the kind of long-term traveling that I'm currently doing. It's the same for my books. I went for 2 types of books. A, the books that were bothering me, the books that I couldn't wait to read and take with me, and B, the books that I knew I wouldn't mind rereading over and over again. So to go with the latter category first, I brought, for example, Conrad's Heart of Darkness, one of my favorite novels of all time, and the Barnes & Noble's Classics edition of it also has some of the short stories that he was especially well known for, so I know that I'll be quite content with rereading that novel several times again. I think I've read it 3 or 4 times already. It's one of my favorite books. It's definitely in my top 10 list. And you know that if you were listening to the most beautiful quotes in literature of all time. I think I quoted that, I'm not sure, but this is definitely within my top 10-15 novels. Another is Der Junge in gestreiften Pyjama, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, in German, a novel I haven't finished in the original language, but I have read it in English once or twice, and Certainly one that I can glean a lot from subsequent readings of. And another is, of course, the Bible, which is so full of gems, both obviously religiously for me as a religious person, but also perhaps less obviously, actually, the Bible functions exceptionally well as a literary text, especially books like, for example, the Book of Job, which is essentially an epic poem that dives into questions like, why do bad things happen to good people? And that's the title, by the way, of another book that I just finished before I left school by Rabbi Kushner. It's a really excellent read. I don't know if I'll end up doing a review of that or not, but it's a really great moral concept to consider and go over on your own. A few audiobooks that I have on my phone, like Die Verwandlung, The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka, and Emma, I think that's by Jane Austen, are also books that I don't mind listening to a few times over, especially Emma. I probably missed a few things the first time that I listened to it. The second category of books that I talked about earlier and that I brought were books that were begging my attention. Books like Machines Like Me by Ian McEwan. I was halfway through when I left school, so had to bring that with me. Improvement by Joan Silber, Miss Smilla's Feeling for Snow by Peter Hoag, and these were the projects that I couldn't put off until I moved back to Chicago, and these are things that I'll be sending stateside when I'm finished, so I won't be carrying them around with me all summer, but I will be reading them. So as you can already tell, I do have quite a few books with me, like 7 or 8, and not to mention the things like my password book, because I don't trust technology, and my planner, because I don't trust technology, and what I've made is essentially a capsule library for when I'm living abroad. If we compare this capsule library directly to the capsule wardrobe for clothing, there are these basic pieces, like in the wardrobe, things like a good pair of trousers, trainers, or a black t-shirt, that are essentials. These are just like my Bible or Heart of Darkness. And then things that perhaps add a bit of color, accent pieces that can be exchanged as the seasons continue. So these are things like Miss Smilla's Feeling for Snow. That's a Scandinavian thriller novel. It's one of the most famous translations of it, actually, and it's the first true Scandi thriller that I've ever read, actually. So, and as well, books like Machines Like Me. It's my first Ian McEwan book. I mean, I've seen Atonement, which is just a stunning, sad film that I would highly recommend seeing. I think it's on Netflix, but I just love his prose. And you'll hear more about that within a few weeks of my review. But again, these are things that literally pretty much add accent into my library. Okay, now moving on to Kindles. So in what seems now like a completely different universe, I actually had the first Barnes & Noble Kindle that ever came out in the early 2000s. And for my purposes, I mean, it was before my grunge phase when I stopped reading books just at all for a few years, even for class. I'm really sorry to my freshman English teacher because I didn't read a single book that year. So maybe I should talk about that later, that transition. That's a very interesting period in my life. But back then, before the grunge phase and before my phase now, obviously, I was reading a tremendous amount and I loved having that convenience of the Kindle available to me. I always had it on me. The battery life was already very excellent, but at least in that first iteration, I really felt that a lot of things were missing from it. So back then, Kindles were very clunky. I had a bright white version. It was really heavy and I didn't enjoy bringing it with me to class, and that was a point in class when we actually had time sectioned off in the day to read, so it almost wasn't worth it to bring the whole Kindle just for that time, but I digress. There were also a lot of problems with the software, and I could back then get away with doing things like playing chess if I really didn't want to read on it, so I didn't like that there were a lot of extraneous things on it besides just books, and not to mention some of the facts like Kindle books were quite expensive and the availability was very limited back then, so there wasn't really much draw in terms of finding out what sort of new books were available, and my reading level also wasn't very high at that point. I was probably in 5th or 6th grade, so it wasn't a really worthwhile experience for me, and that's why I got very disenchanted with Kindles early on. Nowadays, though, I'll talk about this in a minute, but nowadays it seems pretty good. So I'm that person who's obsessed with turning the pages and the tangibility of every word as it's printed on the page. I love how different books have different editions with different introductions, and you all know how obsessed I am with introductions, and I love how there's often a little note on the type at the end of printed books. So for me, digitizing my library would probably be easier for my headaches, but much more difficult for my heart. I've just done a bit of research on Kindles, and nowadays the Nook brand is certainly not as popular as it once was, and especially as popular as the Amazon brands, like the Fire Tablet, for example, and the classic Kindles as well. After looking at them and the people using them, I'm rather impressed with the updates of all the systems that I just mentioned. I didn't know this before, but actually a lot of Kindles are now paired with audiobook capabilities, so you can go from reading to listening, which I think is pretty snazzy. Maybe I will look at Kindles now that I have brought it up for myself, but we'll see. I'll keep y'all updated. The ultimate minimalist book-loving journey is, as I'm sure, one full of only digitized versions of books. For example, something with maybe just a Kindle or just an iPhone, but there are, of course, other ways to go the same route, and I think there's nothing wrong with creating a capsule library like mine for your adventures. All of this being said, I've realized as I've been traveling how personal and integral book reading is to me, especially since I'm finding creative ways to make my book reading work with other aspects of my lifestyle, like minimalism and like this traveling. So to summarize, for a capsule library, I think the most important things to consider when building it are the rereadability of books that you're bringing, as well as the urgency of the books that you're bringing. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there is an episode of DH&I for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our back catalog of episodes. 2019 is the year of Didion, so if you'd like to follow along in my quest to read Joan Didion's collective works or learn more about the movement to bring lit back to people, everything can be found at didionandhawthorne.blueberry.net. And remember that blueberry is spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Now you can also follow the show on Twitter with @DidionIn, 2 N's total. I'll be posting about new lit releases, reading lists, and of course the new projects and episodes relating to DH&I. Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!